Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
So there's been a lot of news recently about the bishops drafting a document about the Eucharist and receiving the Eucharist, which normally is not going to make the news. Except the media is hoping, frankly, that the document's going to rebuke President Biden for being a Catholic who supports legal abortion. Odds are it won't even mention Biden by name, but 60 Catholic Democrats in Congress, including Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and others, well, they wrote a letter recently that criticized the bishops for being, Catholic. One of the signers, Representative Ted Lieu from California, he went on Twitter, and this is what he said. Dear USCCB, I'm Catholic and I support contraception, a woman's right to choose, treatments for infertility, the right for people to get a divorce, the right of same-sex marriage. Next time I go to church, I dare you to deny me communion. All right, first, isn't it weird to brag about being part of a religion, but then deny the religion's core moral teachings? It'd be like saying, I'm vegan, but I eat meat and wear leather shoes. I dare you to revoke my membership with PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Second, the church is okay with treatments for infertility as long as they don't separate reproduction from the marital act. So you can treat the scarring of the fallopian tubes, for example, but you can't create embryos with IVF. The church also allows for civil divorce in rare circumstances, like to protect children. It just doesn't allow remarriage after a civil divorce, unless the previous marriage was annulled. Now, I know these are minor points, but the point of this whole episode is to not misrepresent what the church teaches, which is what Catholic pro-choice politicians do. Finally, I dare you? What are we, in the sixth grade? That's why I put up a tweet of my own daring the congressman to come on my podcast and explain his views. And he actually responded to me. This is what he said. Are you also going to say Bill Barr should be denied the Eucharist for expanding death penalty executions, or that he shouldn't call himself a Catholic? Now, no word yet on if Representative Lieu will be on my show, though I'm not holding my breath. So instead, I thought it'd be helpful today to go through the tactics that pro-choice Catholic politicians use to justify their support of the legal killing of small human beings, even though their own religion tells them this is a grave evil. But before we look at these tactics, this is just a reminder to please like this video, subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you're listening on podcasts, leave a review at iTunes or Google Play, and please visit TrenthornPodcast.com to help us keep making this great content. All right, now here are the six sneaky tactics of pro-choice Catholic politicians. Number one, they double down on how Catholic they are. So when these politicians are challenged, you're Catholic, but you're for abortion. When they're challenged, they always talk about how Catholic they are, and they even act kind of offended at the suggestion they're contradicting the church. This happens a lot when I hear people call Catholic Answers Live. They'll say they're Catholic and they're pro-choice. I mean, if I had a nickel for every time a pro-choice Catholic told me on the radio they went to Catholic school their whole life, I could finally afford to send my kids to Catholic school. So when people do this, I'm ardently, sincerely Catholic. It's an appeal to authority, and it's an invalid one. So here are a few examples of it with pro-choice Catholic politicians.
I am a devout, practicing Catholic.
My religion defines who I am, and I've been a practicing Catholic my whole life.
For example, you're a Catholic who accepts the abortion teaching, as I did, and lived by it for, say, 50 years.
As a practicing and respectful Catholic, this is sacred ground to me when we talk about this. I don't think it should have anything to do with politics.
It's important you're aware of this rhetorical trick, and then point out how the person is being hypocritical in bragging about their Catholic faith while denying one of the Catholic Church's core moral teachings. After all, if they were really faithful to the church's teachings, to being Catholic, then we wouldn't be questioning their Catholic identity in the first place. Number two, I can't impose my views on others. This is the classic pro-choice Catholic politician argument. And it makes sense in a superficial kind of way. My Catholic faith obliges me to be pro-life, but I can't make other people hold that view by changing the law.
But refuses to take the position that now I have to make the whole society of non-Catholics, non-believers, and even those Catholics who do not accept the abortion, I have to impose a law upon them or attempt to.
The problem with this argument, however, is that banning abortion is not like forcing people to go to Mass on Sunday. Our Catholic faith obliges us to end grave evils other people see no problem committing. Here's Cardinal Renzi making the point better than I can.
To the person who says, personally, I am against abortion, but then, if people want to do it, I leave them free, you could say, you are a member of the Senate or the Congress. Personally, I am not in favor of shooting the whole lot of you. But if somebody else wants to shoot all of you in the Senate or all of you in Congress, it's just pro-choice for that person. But personally, I'm not in favor. That is what he is saying. He is saying that personally, he is not in favor of killing these millions of children in the womb. But if others want to do it, it's pro-choice.
One way around this, though, is to say, look, abortion is murder if you're Catholic, because the church teaches life begins at conception. But I can't force other people to believe life begins at conception. Here's a clip of Vice President Joe Biden making this argument in 2008. So let's go through it and we'll point out its flaws.
With regard to abortion, I accept my church's position on abortion as what we call de fide doctrine. Life begins at conception. That's the church's judgment. I accept it in my personal life. But I refuse to impose it on equally devout Christians and Muslims and Jews. And I just refuse to impose that on others, unlike my friend here, the congressman. I do not believe that that we have a right to tell other people that women, they can't control their body. It's a decision between them and their doctor.
We'll get to the question of when life begins soon, but while the church has infallibly taught that direct abortion is always wrong, it hasn't infallibly defined when life begins. So Biden makes it seem like he's in good standing because he personally believes life begins at conception, but he can't make other people believe that. Well, first, Biden's press secretary, Jen Psaki, was asked recently what the president thinks about the unborn. And so here's her answer.
Does the president believe that a 15-week-old unborn baby is a human being?
Are you asking me if the president supports a woman's right to choose? He does.
So she doesn't say Biden believes it's a baby or a human being, just he's for abortion. Second, the law always imposes a view on when life begins. Right now, it imposes that view at birth. So if you think infanticide is okay, maybe your religion teaches it, or you are a fan of the philosopher Peter Singer, if you think infanticide is okay, the law imposes on you and says, no, you can't kill children after they're born. Third, the church teaches that Catholics have a responsibility to not just be personally uninvolved with abortion, but to make it illegal. In the Gospel of Life, Pope St. John Paul II said this: civil law must ensure that all members of society enjoy respect for certain fundamental rights which innately belong to the person, rights which every positive law must recognize and guarantee. First and fundamental among these is the inviolable right to life of every innocent human being. I urgently appeal once more to all political leaders not to pass laws which, by disregarding the dignity of the person, undermine the very fabric of society.
Back in 2008, Pope Benedict XVI even explained this to Nancy Pelosi in person. Here's an Associated Press story on it.
According to the Vatican, Pope Benedict told the Democrat from California that she has a duty to protect life. Pelosi is Catholic, but also supports abortion rights. The Vatican says the Pope talked to her about, quote, the dignity of human life from conception to natural death. And it says she should use her position to create, quote, a just system of laws capable of protecting human life at all stages of its development.
Fourth, the question of when life begins is not a religious issue. A Catholic supporting laws that ban abortion is not imposing his religion on anybody any more than a Catholic who supports laws against shoplifting imposes the seventh commandment. They're principles of reason primarily, not religion. In fact, in 2020, Pope Francis said in a private letter, "The issue of abortion is not essentially religious. It is a human problem prior to any religious option. The abortion issue must be addressed scientifically." And the Pope even underlined the word scientifically in his letter. Finally, the "I can't impose my view" argument is bogus, because people like President Biden impose their moral views on other issues. They support laws addressing climate change that impose requirements on people who disagree about climate change, or they support abolishing the death penalty even though other people support it. Congressman Paul Ryan, in his debate with Biden, even made this very point in his 2008 with then Vice President Biden.
"I don't see how a person can separate their public life from their private life or from their faith. Our faith informs us in everything we do. My faith informs me about how to take care of the vulnerable, about how to make sure that people have a chance in life. Now, you want to ask basically why I'm pro-life? It's not simply because of my Catholic faith. That's a factor, of course. But it's also because of reason and science."
Number three is complaining about alleged double standards. So on Twitter, Representative Liu said, "Well, if you're going to get mad at me, what about people like William Barr, who are Catholic and support the death penalty?" All right, well, first, voting for legal abortion. I agree, it's not the only sin that would justify withholding communion from a politician or a public figure. Here's what Bishop Rhodes of Fort Wayne said about other issues that could factor into this.
"And even though a lot of the publicity has been about pro-abortion politicians, I mean, I think we would also look at, let's say, someone who's involved in human trafficking and the scandal that would be created if someone publicly was involved in that or was a leader in a white supremacist group or whatever, going up and receiving Holy Communion. Obviously, that would be problematic."
So there are many instances where someone could be an obstinate, manifest grave sin and justify withholding communion from that person because of it. But we need to recognize that this is a diversionary tactic. We should stay focused on the Catholic politician who advocates for abortion. And sometimes it's best here to just give a hypothetical. You could do this even if you don't personally agree with a hypothetical. So with someone like Representative Liu, for example, I asked him on Twitter, I said, "All right, well, if the church decided, if the church formally withholds communion from abortion and death penalty enablers, would you submit to its teaching?" So now I'm putting it back to him and there's no answer. Now, I know the death penalty is controversial for people, but it's important to bring up because every Catholic politician I know of that supports legal abortion, they also oppose the death penalty. So you could ask them, yes or no, does your Catholic faith require you to pass laws to protect prisoners from the threat of capital punishment? Does your Catholic faith require you to do that? Yes or no? If they say, yes, my faith requires me to do that, then you can ask, why doesn't your faith require you to protect the unborn from abortion? Or do you only impose the parts of your Catholic faith that align with your political ideology? Or they might say no. They might say, look, I'm against the death penalty, not because I'm Catholic, but because it's the right thing to do. I'm passing these laws because we ought to protect prisoners and others from capital punishment. You can say, okay, then we can leave aside being Catholic then. If you agree that just human decency demands we protect criminals from the death penalty, if you, Mr. Pro-Choice Catholic politician or Mrs., believe that, protect criminals from the death penalty, shouldn't we also, human decency, require that we protect unborn children from abortion? Number four, focus on ensoulment instead of abortion.
"This is the taking of life. That's the church's position at the moment. It wasn't always. It wasn't St. Ambrose's. It wasn't Aquinas's. It wasn't Augustine's."
On a 2008 episode of Meet the Press, Tom Brokaw asked Nancy Pelosi about when life begins. Here was her answer.
Senator Obama saying the question of when life begins is above his pay grade, whether you're looking at it scientifically or theologically. If he were to come to you and say, help me out here, Madam Speaker, when does life begin? What would you tell him?
I would say that as an ardent practicing Catholic, this is an issue that I have studied for a long time. And what I know is over the centuries, the doctors of the church have not been able to make that definition. And St. Augustine said at 3 months. We don't know. The point is that it shouldn't have an impact on a woman's right to choose. And so I don't think anybody can tell you when life begins. Human life begins. As I say, the Catholic Church for centuries has been discussing this, and there are those who've decided.
The Catholic Church at the moment feels very strongly that it begins
that.
At the point of
conception. And this is like maybe 50 years or something right. like that. So again, over the history of the church, this is an issue of controversy.
You know, a lot of people say pro-lifers want to just impose their religion on people, but it's only pro-choice people who talk about the soul. Do you ever notice that? Like, pro-lifers just say it's a human being, don't kill him, when it comes to abortion. Pro-choice people bring up the soul to confuse the issue, because you can't empirically detect a soul. So it creates these uncertainties related to abortion and the standard you use for it. In fact, that's why the church's teaching on abortion is not based on the fetus having a soul. In 1974, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, they said this in their declaration on procured abortion. Respect for human life is called for from the time that the process of generation begins, from the time that the ovum is fertilized. A life is begun which is neither that of the father nor of the mother. It is rather the life of a new human being with his own growth. It would never be made human if it were not human already. To this perpetual evidence, perfectly independent of the discussions on the moment of animation, or the soul, modern genetic science brings valuable confirmation. It has demonstrated that, from the first instant, there is established the program of what this living being will be, a man. This individual man with his characteristic aspects already well determined, right from fertilization, is begun the adventure of human life. If you want more evidence life begins at conception, definitely check out my video, Proof, Human Life Begins at Conception. So early Christians agreed that it was a grave evil to kill the developing human life in the womb, regardless of whether or not God had formed it with a soul. St. Basil the Great actually said this in the 4th century. He said of the punishments related to abortion, he says, "With us, there is no nice inquiry as to its being formed or unformed." Now, today, unlike the saints and doctors of the past, we know that a biological human organism isn't formed like a clay model. It has a human genetic code. This makes an unborn child a developing human being whose life begins at conception, and therefore it deserves respect and protection under the law. Now, it's true that the saints and the church fathers and the doctors of the church, there's disagreement among them about when the soul enters the body. Part of that is because they didn't have the biological knowledge that we have today. They didn't know about things like DNA. So they followed Aristotle's theory that you had a vegetative soul and body, then an animal soul and body, and finally a body capable of receiving a rational soul. But now we know about human DNA. We know that from the moment of conception, there's an individual human organism that is growing and developing. I mean, sperm and egg weren't even discovered until after the Middle Ages. So that's part of it. The other part is that the moment of ensoulment is not something that has been given to us in the deposit of faith. So theologians disagree about that. But I would say that the most sensible conclusion is that because the soul is the principle of life, it's what makes a body animated and alive rather than being a corpse, that the soul would exist in the body when the body first exists. And so we have a human body after successful fertilization, because that's when you have, like I said, a complete human organism. So there's dispute about that, but the church's teaching, as I said before, is not based on ensoulment. It's based on the fact that we know this is a human being, we know that it violates the fifth commandment to directly kill human beings, and this is something the church has always taught. For example, this is what the Catechism says about the church's universal teaching on abortion. Since the first century, the church has affirmed the moral evil of every procured abortion. This teaching has not changed and remains unchangeable. Direct abortion, That is to say, abortion willed either as an end or a means is gravely contrary to the moral law, paragraph 2271. So if science shows the unborn are human beings, and reason and revelation inform us that human beings ought to be protected under the law, it follows that everyone, everybody, especially Catholic politicians, should work to outlaw abortion. Number five, God gave us free will. One argument I hear a lot from pro-choice Christians, not just Catholics, but Christians, is that God gave us free will, so that means you can't outlaw abortion. Here's some clips.
I also believe in God-given free will and autonomy, and therefore I vote yes for gay rights. And last but not least, I vote pro-choice.
But it is also true that God has given us, each of us, a free will and a responsibility to answer for our actions.
But by that logic, we shouldn't have laws that prohibit rape or murder because God gave us free will to do those bad things? Well, yeah, we have free will, but that only means we can choose our actions. And because we can choose, that means we can be held responsible for our actions. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, St. Paul even says, "We are of good courage. We would rather be away from the body and at home with the Lord. So whether we are at home or away, we make it our aim to please him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may receive good or evil according to what he has done in the body." And finally, number six, abusing the rights of conscience.
There's always total freedom of conscience. Your freedom, as a matter of fact, our religion teaches you have to follow your conscience.
So in that letter that 60 Catholic Democrats signed about the Eucharist and abortion, they write this: "We seek the Church's guidance and assistance, but believe also in the primacy of conscience. In recognizing the Church's role in providing moral leadership, we acknowledge and accept the tension that comes with being in disagreement with the Church in some areas." This is a common argument. Well, the Church says this, my conscience says otherwise. Catholics for Choice, put Catholics in quotation marks there, they make the same kind of argument. This is what they say: "The teaching on the primacy of conscience means that every individual must follow his or her own conscience and respect the rights of others to do the same." Right, you need to follow your conscience, but your conscience also needs to be formed. These people are acting like your conscience can never make a mistake, but that can't be right. For example, my conscience tells me to make abortion illegal, no matter what anybody else's conscience says about them. So I would ask Catholics for Choice, should I make abortion illegal? My conscience says that I should. If Catholics for Choice says I shouldn't make abortion illegal, to not follow my conscience and do that, then they're wrong about that your conscience could never be mistaken. And the fact of the matter is, people who think abortion ought to be illegal, ought to be legal, their conscience is mistaken. It's like a compass that is faulty and is not pointing towards true north. So that's why, yes, we must follow our conscience, but we always have the duty to form our conscience. This is how the Catechism puts it. We must always obey the certain judgment of conscience. But it's possible our conscience can make an erroneous judgment due to ignorance or even blindness that's caused by sin. And Catholic politicians who think it's okay to vote for laws that uphold and expand the legal dismemberment of small human beings are simply evidence of how sin can muzzle even the most obvious examples of where the voice of our conscience should be speaking to us. St. Paul talks about this kind of evil in Romans chapter 1, where he writes this: "For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their senseless minds were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools." Well, thank you guys so much for watching this video and listening to this episode. In a future episode, I'm going to talk about how both Christians and non-Christians misinterpret the Bible when it comes to abortion. So I've purposely left misinterpreting scripture off this list of pro-choice Catholic politicians and their sneaky tactics, but I want to address it. I want to give it its own episode here soon. So I hope this is helpful for all of you, and thanks for watching and listening, and I hope that you have a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.